From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. The Negro spiritual has deep roots in American history. From slave ships en route from Africa to cotton fields in the American South, spirituals spoke of struggle, faith, and freedom. This hour, my guest is Randy Jones of Grinnell College, a soprano and lead researcher for the Art of the Negro Spiritual. The goal of this project is to gather information about the history and key figures of Negro spirituals while performing recitals around Iowa. A look into the past of spirituals and the work being done to revitalize them today. That's right after this news update. And this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest this hour is Randy Jones of Grinnell College. Randy Jones has gained international recognition for her research of African-American vocalists and composers. She is the lead researcher for a project called The Art of the Negro Spiritual. She has also served as a consultant for the Kennedy Center Honors and the Washington Chorus. Good morning to you. Randy Jones joins us in our studio today. Hi.
Hi.
Glad to have you with us, and I'm looking forward to this hour sharing the history of these spirituals and also listening to some of your recordings. Let's talk a little bit, maybe go a little bit chronologically as you give us a brief history of the spiritual, Negro spiritual. Tell us, first of all, the goal, a little bit about the Art of the Negro Spiritual, your project.
Okay. Well, the project started actually around 2002. I had been interested in spirituals for quite some time. I began singing them really as long as I could remember from growing up, you know, in church through
college.
Did you grow up
here in Iowa or elsewhere?
No, I'm originally from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was just part of my family's tradition. And then in my church, even though I'm raised a Lutheran, it was an interesting combination of spirituals and German hymns. So, when I got into undergraduate school, I had attended a Black Women's College, Bennett College in Greensboro,
mm-hmm.
And was exposed to choral settings of spirituals, which I found that I really enjoyed singing quite a bit. But then when I got into graduate school at Florida State University, this is where I really started doing research. My freshman year, a professor came in as a guest, and his specialization was Black music studies. So, I was a singer, Black music.
Sure.
I decided to just do a little research as part of that class on spirituals, and I found that it really awoke a keen interest in the style. I started studying it more regularly, and then it reached a point where I was finding so much difficulty just learning more about the style, finding music. I ended up with photocopies that were photocopies of photocopies of photocopies,
really?
And finding recordings and so forth. And I just said, well, if I'm having this difficult a time finding this music, I'm sure I am not the only one. So there's got to be a resource available that can tell you how to get this stuff. And I found that there wasn't.
So you found a real hole here in research, musicology, the American musical landscape.
Right. And I said, well, why not try to at least help fill that hole a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, compiling materials. And I must admit, the internet has been such a huge help to me. I get on and I've been able to make contacts with people who are also interested in the subject. I started putting together websites and, people find me, I find them.
Right.
They tell me where I can find resources. I've made connections with people who are in sites such as the Center for Black Music Research in Chicago, Moreland Spingarn in Washington, et cetera. And they've all been a great help to me as far as gaining information, finding new recordings, becoming familiar with new singers that I hadn't heard of before. I mean, most people have heard of Leontine Price or Marian Anderson. But I was finding people, you know, Roland Hayes, who actually was a predecessor of Marian Anderson, who actually was a mentor of hers, who had back in the 20s became one of the most successful concertizers in the world. But by the time I come along, he's completely off the scene. I can't, you know, hadn't heard of him. But I find out he's not only was a fantastic tenor who, you know, fortunately some of his recordings still exist, but I also find out he was a composer of spirituals. And I've, you know, had a chance to program some of his music. So anyway, the point was that the Art of the Negro Spiritual is a way of not only teaching myself this music, but trying to gather the resources together so that I can make it a little easier for the next person coming along to find them.
And it sounds like you're taking this also, putting it in documents, documenting it so it doesn't get lost. If it is ignored for generations, then there is the potential for these composers to be somewhat lost.
Right.
We want to mention your website. We'll mention it later on in the hour as well. ArtOfTheNegroSpiritual.com
right.
is your website. A lot of resources there, a lot of downloadable music. I wanted to have you take us to do a brief history of the spiritual Negro, Negro spiritual with us. And you brought some sound, some music along with us, some
yes.
of the spirituals that you yourself have recorded. Take us back to how these began.
Well, the music basically came along with the people. These were Africans who had been brought over against their will to America to be slaves. They had a very rich musical tradition. Music was very much a part of their everyday lives, from, you know, work, social events, etc. And just because they had come to the United States and had lost contact with their families, their traditions, etc., they still had the music. And so whenever they had the opportunity to be able to sing, it was something that not only allowed them to contact, to communicate with one another, but to also to basically to help deal with the turmoil, the trials of being a slave.
Mm-hmm.
The masters, slave owners, were introduced the idea of Christianity. Of course, this was one of the excuses they used for slavery in the first place, was that, you know, we're bringing these heathens over to become good Christians.
Right.
Now, of course, the economics of it were a different thing, but, you know, hey, it just works out that way. Christianity was introduced to them. But the slaves noticed that there was a bit of a disconnect between the master sitting in church on Sunday and beating their slaves, raping their women, et cetera, on Monday through Saturday. So even though they accepted Christianity in time, their Christianity was a very different one. It was one where they really took a very personal level of feeling for, you know, Christ. Mm-hmm. They saw in him someone who had the same trials and tribulations they did. And they felt like, you know, he would indeed see them through the slavery and bring them out into freedom. So their songs begin to reflect this. And this is where you start hearing spirituals, songs such as Go Down Moses. You know, they heard the stories in the Bible, and the songs reflected them. Mm-hmm. There also were secret signals, as some people would say. You know, because obviously you can't very well tell the master, I'm getting ready to escape.
Right.
So they had to communicate this type of message to one another, or that there was going to be a secret meeting. So you'd hear somebody singing Steal Away to Jesus. Steal Away actually is one of the few spirituals that someone has had at least the likelihood of a connection to a specific person. Most spirituals are like folk songs. You don't know who wrote them. You don't know who, where they were, how they exactly were created. Mm-hmm. And you have people who are going to debate whether or not there is connection with the hymns that they heard in the churches.
Randy, you've got me so excited mentioning all these titles, talking about it. You brought along a number of these recordings. Can we listen to one of these right now? What would you? What can we listen to right now? Which title would you like to go to?
I would think, since I mentioned "Steal Away," that would probably be, you know, just to hear a little bit of it. It is a song that is connected to a revolutionary named Nat Turner. That he used that song to call his people together, and that they led a revolt in Virginia, and I believe it was 1832 that led to some, unfortunately, a number of deaths, both of his members, himself, he was hung, and some of the slave owners, et cetera, were killed as well. But this song has been connected to him as to whether he actually wrote it or not, I don't know.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of this. This is my guest, Randy Jones of Grinnell College, Negro spiritual researcher and also soprano, singing this traditional spiritual, "Steal Away." The lovely voice of my guest, soprano Randy Jones of Grinnell College, a Negro spiritual researcher for a project she started called The Art of the Negro Spiritual, and that was her recording. We have to take a short break. Where was that recorded, Randy?
That was actually recorded at George Washington University back in, I think, 2005.
Very good. Randy, stay put. We'll talk to you some more about spirituals, a brief history of that, along with plenty of music coming up as well as we explore The Art of the Negro Spiritual with Randy Jones. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're back with The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and my guest this hour is Randy Jones of Grinnell College, who has gained international recognition for her research of African-American vocalists and composers. She's a lead researcher for a project called The Art of the Negro Spiritual. And this hour, she's telling us about the history of these spirituals, and we're listening to some of the songs that she has recorded herself. And you can find out more by going to her website, artofthenegrospiritual.com. Randy, when we left off, you were giving us a brief history of these spirituals and really talking about how Christianity tied in with the plight of the slave in this country. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to pick up now?
Well, I'm going to pick up from that point and basically take you into a period right after the Civil War. The songs were certainly a big part of the slaves' ability to survive the degradation that they received while they were slaves. But As we approach the Civil War, these songs and the end of the Civil War, slaves were freed. They started to not want to sing them anymore because they connected them so strongly to their captivity. And there's the thought that the songs would have died completely were it not for a few people who had attempted to notate, to narrate and set down the songs. There were a couple of different very important collections that were put together. But one I want to mention is called Slave Songs of the United States. It was compiled by three people, William Francis Allen, Charles Pickard Ware, and Lucy McGim Garrison. The idea was that they pulled together these songs that they had heard across the South. But one of the things that one of the compilers mentioned, and I wanted to read just a little bit of that prologue, was how difficult it was to notate these songs. And I think he says it better than I can. It says, the best that we can do, however, with paper and types or even with voices will convey but a faint shadow of the original. The voices of the colored people have a particular quality that nothing can imitate, and the intonations and delicate variations even of one singer cannot be reproduced on paper. And I despair of conveying any notion of the effect of a number singing together, especially of a complicated shout. So basically, what they were trying to do was to take a European style of music and use it to try to convey a style of music that was not European.
So the music notation, European music notation, was somehow, because this was an oral tradition. This was a tradition passed on up to a certain point without being recorded, without being noted, right?
Yes.
And so we try to bring this system, the European tradition, in and that worked successfully or not?
Well, it was as successful as it was going to be because you're talking about a style of music where you have people singing chord combinations that were simply not translatable into European style, singing quarter tones, and where the European style is pretty much a half-tone scale. So, you know, how do you translate that into a style that people can understand? And I think that's also one of the challenges that I found as a singer is when I'm trying to improvise pieces, is how do I convey what the person has been able to set down on a piece of music in such a way that it sounds like what you need to hear in a spiritual as far as, blues elements or so forth.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way you can demonstrate that in the studio, how you interpret that?
Yes, actually. There's a song that I'm going to be doing on a recital this Sunday called Witness by a composer named Hall Johnson. He is probably better known as choral director and composer of choral pieces, but he wrote quite a bit of solo music. He wrote Witness, and he writes in the instructions in a swing style. Well, if you need to understand basically what's going on with swing, and then you also need to make decisions about whether or not you want to sing dialect. And what I'm going to do is try to sing it to you, first of all, straight. Like if you're just looking at the piece of music and trying to sing exactly what you see there.
Okay, ignoring the notation for swing.
Ignoring the notation for swing and also using no dialect.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, Lord, what manner of man is this? All nations in him are blessed. All things are done by his will. He spoke to the sea and the sea stood still. Now, ain't that a witness for my Lord? Ain't that a witness for my Lord? Ain't that a witness for my Lord? My soul is a witness for my Lord. Now, I'm sorry, there was a little dialect in there, but that's just the way it is. But this time I'm going to sing it, and I'm going to sing it more in a swing style, and there's also going to be some bending of notes, and you're going to hear certainly far more dialect.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, Lord, what manner of man is this? All nations in him are blessed. All things are done by his will. He spoke to the sea and the sea stood still. Now, ain't that a witness for my Lord? Ain't that a witness for my Lord? Ain't that a witness for my Lord? My soul is a witness for my Lord.
Randy, that's so beautiful. People are going to want to know the particulars of how they see you. You said, is this a public event? People can come and see you singing?
Yes. It's going to be in Story City, Sunday, 4 o'clock at St. Petrie Lutheran Church.
Sunday, 4 o'clock in Story City.
Yes.
Okay. So the swing is very evident, not only in your voice, but I have the advantage of seeing you. You're swinging in your chair there as
mm-hmm.
you're singing too. So this was added to those spirituals later on?
Well, no. I think that the spirituals actually, because they are the precursor of swing and jazz and gospel and so many other music styles here in the United States, you're actually simply conveying, and I think this is one of the things why spirituals are so special, is that you cannot sit straight and sing this music.
Right.
It will sound dead. It will sound cold. It will sound lifeless. You really do have to put something into it. You have to invest, you know, not only technical skill, but also, you know, a little bit of something of you in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the things why, I listen to some folks who may not be African-American, who debate whether or not they want to sing spirituals because they wonder if, you know, this is something that I should do and people are going to think that I'm putting blacks down or, you know, or somehow being, just not really being respectful of the music. I think of spirituals as being exactly the same as far as whether or not any other music style. You had to decide whether or not you have the vocal skills, whether or not you have the temperament for it, whether you want to invest the your skills into that style of music. I went to graduate school. I did graduate studies. I had to sing German lead. I doubt that I could stand in front of a German audience and convince them that I'm a German singer. But I was expected to learn the style.
Now, when you talk of a spiritual, for you as a singer, what are the chief challenges in singing a spiritual compared to other types of music, the German lead or maybe gospel, blues, whatever?
Well, I think as far as comparing it to, say, German lead, I don't know. I guess to me, I don't really connect to that in the same way. I mean, I sing the music, but I feel like I could pretty much stand there, and as long as I'm doing it technically correct and the pronunciation is correct, I don't really feel an investment so much to that music. But then again, for spirituals, I guess because it is part of my heritage, I do make a connection to that music.
We've got to take a break in just about a minute. Is there something we can hear the beginning of in going into this break that would be well suited for our discussion when we come back as well?
Certainly. Sweet Little Jesus Boy. It's actually not a spiritual, but I thought it was a great piece because it shows how a composer who doesn't happen to be African-American, but he knows the style or knew the style, took that music and really made it sound like a spiritual.
Okay, my guest Randy Jones singing Sweet Little Jesus Boy, and we'll talk about that also when we come back after a break. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio.
Thank you.
You're listening to the voice of soprano Randy Jones of Grinnell College. My guest today, besides being a wonderful singer, she is the lead researcher for a project called The Art of the Negro Spiritual. She's been pursuing this project, gathering materials and documenting this history for over 4 or 5 years. And this hour, she's sharing the history of these spirituals with us, along with some of the songs she herself has recorded. You can find more information about it by going to her website, artofthenegrospiritual.com. Listening to a little bit more of your version, your interpretation of Sweet Little Jesus Boy. And you mentioned it's not actually in the spiritual style.
No, actually, it's not. It is actually in the style of a spiritual. And that's what one of the things, I guess, why I found it very interesting was because, I think that there are people who believe that the spiritual is limited to African Americans as far as its composition and its performance. And I think that certainly Robert McGimsey, who is the composer of that Sweet Little Jesus Boy, proves that to be wrong. Mm-hmm. He was raised in the South. He was very much exposed to that style of music, and he shows his comfort with spirituals in that composition. It is a gorgeous piece of music. I have heard so many people tried with various levels of success to sing it.
Was that difficult for you to tackle? Did that take a long time for you to get it, or did you feel naturally stepping into that voice? It sounds so beautiful now.
Well, actually, it was a progression because just like I guess most people, I was not comfortable at first singing spirituals in a concert format. And so it probably some of my very earliest stuff sounded like a very straight, in fact, you might think it was a white woman standing there singing, because no dialect, no improvisation, nothing. I'm just singing it. Mm-hmm. But as time has gone by and as I've become more exposed to it and I've listened to other people who I think have done a wonderful job with the style of music, I've become more comfortable with it and more willing to explore how to sing it.
At this point, now in the 21st century, how can you, as someone who is interested in this historically, know the way it was actually sung in the period of slavery, since this was an oral tradition?
Well, that is one of the challenges, is, you know, how to understand how this music was sung. And, of course, there are no recordings from that era. But there are parts of the country, believe it or not, especially in Georgia, where people have been fairly unexposed to 21st century lifestyle, and they've retained a lot of that tradition. So you actually do find recordings there. There also was back in the 30s during the Depression, an effort made to record the narratives of former slaves before they died. This was all part of the WPA. They went around the South and they actually recorded people talking about how it was like, what it was like to be a slave, and actually have some recordings of them singing. So there are recordings out there. They may not be absolute, you know, spot on, but we have a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm. You brought along a recording of one of the first known spirituals to be recorded, Deep River. We wanted to listen to that, but tell us a little bit about it before we do.
Okay, Deep River was written by H.T. Burley, Harry Thacker Burley. He was born in 1866, the year after the end of the Civil War, and he had attended school at the National Conservatory of Music, was one of the people who influenced Antonin Dvorak to propose spirituals and Native American music as the source for American national music. Well, he graduates, he begins to compose and sing professionally, and he decided to bring the music of his culture and to bring it into a concert form. Deep River is believed to be the first concert, the first spiritual written for concert performance. And so, yes, I'm hoping you can get to hear a little bit of it.
Okay, this is Deep River performed by Randy Jones.
Oh,
Randy Jones, a recording of her singing Deep River, a spiritual. Let me picture this. So this type of spiritual in the days of slavery in this country, would someone have been out laboring, singing a song like that? Or does that fit the picture?
Well, there were songs specifically for work time, work songs that helped.
That would have
to...
been a pretty slow work process.
And yeah, so there were songs that were specifically for work. But the spiritual sorrow songs, plantation songs, whatever term you would like to use, were often done in camp meetings or. And sometimes, just depended on the occasion. And of course, there are faster songs.
Right. You put them in three basic categories: the spirituals, call and response, slow and melodic. I assume Deep River would be a slow and melodic.
Yes.
And then fast and rhythmic. And that would be more maybe
like Witness. Mm-hmm. it tells a story oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And because Witness, I didn't sing all of it, but it tells the story of Nicodemus and then Samson. Or there are other versions that tell stories of other biblical characters. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that would it is pretty much a much faster, almost sermon type tempo.
The hour is getting away from us, and I wanted to put this to you to help us understand how these spirituals developed into different branches of popular music in the 20th century, gospel, the blues, and jazz. How are we to understand the spirituals' relationship to those musics?
Well, I think it's mainly... people had never forgot really the spiritual. There was still, if not the words and specifically the music, there was still the feeling. And as slaves moved from the South, especially moving further north, they still wanted to express their religion, and their feeling for Christ. And they... basically developed, especially as you head further north, you start hearing gospel music. But there are still very strong roots to the spiritual. I think the spiritual as being, a more rural sound, definitely connecting from the plantation and southern area. And gospel music is definitely a much more commercial, much more northern. It was developed in the churches, and it had a very rough time because there is a very definite connection to what they thought of at that time as being the devil's music, blues and jazz and so forth. And they weren't too sure they wanted to have that in their churches. So and it was a very definite attempt to connect it to a specific composer, Thomas Dorsey, etc. And not Tommy Dorsey, Thomas A. Dorsey, who is considered the godfather of modern gospel music. Mm-hmm. And so there is definitely, you can see the connection, but you can also hear the difference.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to make a point about spirituals using two pieces that you brought along, one of those Ride on King Jesus and another one. Would you like to do that?
Yes. What I did recently in two recitals I presented at Grinnell College was to – the first recital was all composers that were born in the 19th century so that they could hear the style of music that was very much influenced by the Romantic and early of 20th century music. And then the second recital, which was just given earlier this month, focused on composers who were born in the 20th century and the influences of later 20th century music on the spiritual and how it was composed. So this is actually two different composers taking the same song, Right on King Jesus, Hall Johnson again, and then a composer named John Carter, and how they took exactly the same song and took two very different approaches with it.
Okay, let's first of all listen to Right on King Jesus, and again, Randy Jones performing this. Okay, so we are listening there for Right on King Jesus, and you want to compare that with another work?
Yes, this is called the Toccata from John Carter's Cantata. And you're basically talking about two very different eras, two very different approaches. In the first one, you hear the piano is really very more, much more supportive of the vocalist. And this next one is like two totally different instruments performing together.
Okay, let's listen to that, Toccata. As a singer, you really, in that second version, you really have to contend with that piano.
Yes. And this is one of the things I, with spirituals, I think that it's easily lost in the perceptions of what spirituals are, is that it's an incredibly challenging music. Even when it's simple, you still have to invest so much in it. But when you have pieces like the Toccata, it is absolutely essential to have an accompanist who can play the style of music, who can follow you, and since there is an improvisational element, who is actually very sensitive, so that, you know, if you do something that the spirit of the moment moves you to do something a little different,
right?
The accompanist, the pianist, is there with you.
We'll pick up on that, and you have a good connection, artistic connection with it.
Yes.
But before our hour ends, I wanted to ask you a little bit, because I know you, with this project, the Art of the Negro Spiritual, you're reaching out, and you would like to find people who have information about experiences with these spirituals. And what particularly are you looking for?
Well, I'm especially interested in finding collections of works by various composers. I'm also looking for recordings. And I find one major hole in my research has been how does one teach this music in a studio? You know, what sort of interpretive things do you need to keep in mind as you're teaching the style to your students? There have been some composers Hall Johnson again, who actually writes a bit about how to perform his particular compositions. But then how do you translate that as far as, you know, taking that into your voice studio and talking with your students?
So part of the goal of this project is to bring spirituals into the classroom, into music studies in education all over the country,
right,
in a more prominent way than it has been.
Yes. I want to try to get this help bring the spiritual to a point where it's as much a part of the standard repertoire as any other voice style, that the voice teacher considers it just like they would any other style as to whether or not their student is ready to sing this music. And if there are, and to be familiar enough with the repertoire that they can pull out something else beside H.T. Burley and sing it.
Right, right. And so you're facing, what hurdles do you face? Prejudices, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of prejudices?
Well, first of all, that, you know, you don't have to be African American to sing spirituals. Mm-hmm. That it's, do you know the style? I have a friend who has attended Florida State with me, who was from Alabama, just as white guy, blonde hair. With, you know, but he was from that area. He knew the style of music, and he could break my heart when I would hear him sing spirituals. On the other end, I have gone to recitals where an African American stood there, and it was just as dead and lifeless, and, you know, no commitment to the music. She didn't know the style, and or if she did know it, she wasn't willing to commit to it and to perform it. So it's not the color; it's the commitment to it. You know, do you want to learn the style, and do you want to understand it? Do you want to understand the history? And I mean, I was not raised as a slave either. Yes, I have had things happen to me. I've been had to sit in the back of a restaurant. I've had people who have talked to me in ways that weren't, you know, simply had to do with my skin color. But the thing was that there, I think everyone has difficulties in their life that they can tap into and use that in their in the expression of the spiritual. It's just understanding it.
Randy Jones, I want to thank you for being with us this hour. We wanted to leave a little bit of time to go out with another piece. I'd like to have you tell us about that. But first of all, I wanted to make sure that people know how to get in contact with you, find out more about your project. You can find that on the web, artofthenegrospiritual.com. You can contact my guest, soprano Randy Jones of Grinnell College, through that site, lead researcher for a project called The Art of the Negro Spiritual. And you will be performing this Sunday in Story City at 4 p.m. Where?
Yes.
Where?
At St. Petrie Lutheran Church.
And other people can find out through your website where you'll be appearing also in the future, I assume.
So yes.
The event. Well, very good. This has been wonderful. You wanted to play, we wanted to go out with something called the Dramatic Declamation.
Yes.
Why did you pick this piece to go out on?
Well, it's part of a set called The Lyric Suite by a contemporary composer, Robert L. Morris. And what he does is he takes the spiritual and he adds a gospel flavor to it. And so I thought this was a good piece for, and it is a very driving, demanding piece. In fact, I had to applaud my accompanist, William Tinker, who, by the way, was a Bach guy who I'm trying to switch over to spirituals. But oh boy, does he play this piece.
Very good. Thank you very much, Randy Jones. Thank you so much. It's been a real joy to share the hour with you and you hear about your project.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Randy, let's go on with more of Randy Jones. This is a Dramatic Declamation. Once again, thanks to our guest today, soprano Randy Jones. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.